Open your Bible this evening. We're going to go to Genesis as a jumping off place, and being a little bit incapacitated or slightly incapacitated, I've been brushing up on a few things for some of the classes I have taught in the past, and so that kind of segued into what I want to do tonight, along with some of the things that are contemporary and going on. And if you haven't been a victim of the news lately, you probably are aware our country's in a mess. And we're as close to falling, I think, perhaps as we've been in quite some time. We are adamantly opposed on virtually every issue, it seems, at some point with whoever's on the other side. There's no peaceable middle ground, it seems, anymore. It's either you're on my side or I'm going to bump you off or do something. At least that's what the rhetoric sounds like. And so tonight I want to spend some time and not necessarily deal with American history, although by the time I'm done, which probably will not be until next time, we'll segue a little bit into what I would tend to call a biblical line of authority. Who has authority? Who tells me what to do? Where are my obligations and where do they rest? And so I want to look at them tonight. And John has some handouts he's passing out. And will they help? I don't know. Will they help you remember what you're doing? I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how many of you fill them out. I made them as easy as I could. I think there's actually the maximum is two blanks in each point. So if you miss this and mess it up, it's going to be your own fault. Where do we get authority from? Who tells me? Okay. Who tells me what to do and what not to do? And why do I have to do what I'm told to do? Is it the law, or is it the police officer? Is it the judge? Is it the legislator? Is it the president? Who is it that actually has authority over me and in my lifetime? And I want to trace tonight that lineage, as it were, of biblical authority, where it comes from. And how it passes down to, I do believe we are citizens of the United States. Let me cut to the chase there. And there is an obligatory status that you and I have as citizens of the United States to be in compliance with those rules and regulations that are imposed upon us as citizens of the United States. Now, the immediate question is, all right, what if they tell you to do something that is immoral or wrong? Do we then have a right or a right slash obligation to comply or not to comply? And if we say, well, we don't, then how can you tell me that it's okay not to comply here and that I must comply here? You understand what I'm talking about? We get a little confused, I think, because we as Christians and Bible believers very often have, and this was a good thing, saw the United States and its laws and its standards as biblical in that sense. And so it was obvious if you're a Christian, you would obey the laws of the land. And yet we're beginning to see a movement away from those things. And a difference of opinion in some of those things. And now we're going to have to question ourselves. Listen, when push comes to shove, what am I obligated to do biblically? Okay, now I realize this. Everybody will do what they want to do. That's not a problem. And we'll be able to justify whatever it is that we do. But I want to make sure we could justify whatever it is we do, whatever decision we make in the light of Scripture and understand how those things are upon us. And so as we look at this, I want you to go back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, and I didn't ask you to turn there. We're going to start in chapter verse number 26. But suffice it to say that all authority in heaven and in earth is vested in God. Okay? You and I have no authority if that authority does not flow back through the chain of command to God Himself. We can superimpose our authority or our will on those who might happen to be under our command or our immediate authority, as it were, but we have no real authority unless that authority traces its way back to God. Now you say, why would you say that? Because in the beginning, God. Okay? There was no human being. There was no human government. There were no nations. There was nothing but God, and God had authority. You say, how do you know that? He said, let there be, and there was. That's pretty good authority. Matter of fact, I don't know of any authority that has that much power in this day and time, no matter where you go on the chain of authority. No government certainly has it. No individual certainly has it in this world. That authority begins with God. God said, in the beginning was God, and God said, let there be, and there was. Notice, if you will, God is in that passage equated, or his authority is equated, with his word. And God said, let there be light, and there was light. So if we understand God as the supreme authority in all things, we also have to understand that his word is the vestige of that authority. Okay, if God is the authoritarian, then his word is what brings everything into obedience to it. We may have laws. You may have a law somewhere in your realm, wherever it might be, and that law may be unknown to you. Okay, have you ever been, I shouldn't ask this question, it might make you a liar. Have you ever been pulled over for speeding when you didn't really know the speed limit? I thought so. But if that were to happen, you see, you would still be under that authority, but you do not know unless there is a posting. Okay? And that posting is somebody putting it in writing, somebody speaking, somebody revealing that law to you so you become aware of it. The Bible said, God said, God said, God said, God said, all the way down through Genesis chapter 1. And when God says it, it happens. God's word then becomes a secondary place or a first stop, as it were, in that chain of authority. God wills it. God says, this is the way it's going to be. And God says, let there be. And then it is. So when we deal with absolute authority, there is no authority that exists that does not come from God unless it is satanic in its origin. All right. If we were to turn in our Bibles tonight, and I'll not ask you to go there because I'm hopeful that you understand what's in this passage. In Isaiah chapter 12, we have the introduction to the devil, as it were. And he said, I will ascend the sides of the north. I will, I will, I will. And he imposes his will above the will of God. And in so doing, God becomes the authoritarian, and the devil becomes the first culprit or violator of God's authority. And as a result, the Bible imposes a sentence and a verdict upon him and says, you're going to be brought down. You're going to be brought down to the sides of the pit. Revelation tells us he's cast into the lake of fire. Why? Because he didn't abide the authority of the authoritarian. Because he disobeyed absolute authority when he disobeyed God and assumed that he could impose his authority higher than that of God and sought to do so. That is what has corrupted the world in which we live. If you want to trace the condition of the world, you know, somebody said, why would God cause wars? He doesn't. Disobedience to God's authority results in wars. Why would somebody kill somebody if there were a God? God doesn't cause anybody to kill somebody. As a matter of fact, his authority tells us not to do that. It is when somebody imposes their will above the authority of God, we have all these disasters. So we begin with and understand that authority lies absolutely and completely in God himself. But God can pass that line of authority down. And that's what I want us to look at tonight. How does it get to the point where, some politician can get up and tell me I have to do this? Or some police officer can tell me you have to do this. You say, do you believe that? Yeah, I do. But it's important we understand what the lineage is of that authority. I'm not here advocating that we don't obey the authorities. I'm not here advocating that we just kind of, give the raspberries to the police officer as we sail by and tell him he doesn't have any authority. He does have authority. But it's important for me to know how he got that authority. And let me help you. It's important for him to know where he got that authority. You say, why? Look at our government. You're looking at a government in a mad scramble. They look like a bunch of escapees from an insane asylum, trying to figure out where they've got their authority. And every time somebody says something, somebody counters that with this, that, or the other. We've got nothing more than back and forth, you know, the hurling of whatever it is at the time, back and forth among themselves. And to be honest with you, I believe we've become a world debacle in the sight of the rest of the world. If you had any concept that America worked, you've lost that now. Because we're back and forth. I think probably the next issue may be a breakout in a fist fight in the halls of Congress. You say, would it? It's happened in the past. And we're almost back to that very place today. We are the civilized nation of the world. You say, well, what's gone wrong? Is the problem with America? Not necessarily. The problem is with where the authority is. Where does that authority emanate from? And what are the channels that it passes down to us? So that, to be honest with you, I think when a police officer says, stop, that is as authoritarian as when God said, let there be light. And there was light. You say, why? Because I think that chain of command comes all the way down there and it's vested in that officer. I'll give you an interesting thought about American history. That's kind of what brought all this to light in my thinking anyway. America didn't have any police force at all until the mid-1800s. There were no policemen in colonial America. None. Not in any city. We didn't need them. You say, why not? Because people submitted themselves to an authority that eliminated the need for a police officer. And because they submitted themselves to that authority, they could get along with each other. And even when they had differences and squabbles, they had a means by which they could settle those squabbles among themselves because they had an authority that they used to either justify their cause or to condemn the cause of another. And everybody submitted to that authority. And as we began to progress, we began to move away from those things. Cultures began to mix. Cities became larger and larger. And all at once, we did not all adhere to the ability to settle our differences by appealing to an authority. And as that authority began to be sidelined, we now have established about 3,000 levels of authority to take its place. And if you're wondering how that's working, look at Washington. Okay? You know what governed our nation in its early days? You say, oh, that's silly. Go back and look at some of the court documents in Jamestown and some of those in early Virginia and find out when they went in to appear before the magistrate with an argument, find how many times they quoted this book. And the judge said, well, you know, that's if the book says it, then that's what we have to do. This was an authority. In the beginning, God, there's the authority. And God said, there's the next level of authority. It's in his word. But as we progress through the scripture, and we'll do that tonight, and I want to show you how we get to where we are. If you study history of Europe, I've studied European history. If you study United States history, you'll find they follow very similar paths. If you study church history, you'll find it follows a very similar path. And that is, as soon as we move away from the authority of God, we end up somewhere in a fist fight. Why? Because I'm as good as you are. And you're as good as I am. And if we're not, then we have to prove that. So we have to duke it out. And you understand, at the end of the day, he who has the might is the one who rules. Those of us who know our Bible know how it ends. How does it end? It ends with the Bible gone and with someone standing up who is Satan incarnate saying, I'm in charge. And because he has power, greater power than anybody else, he assumes control of this world until God comes.
So God is the primary authority. The devil is the arch nemesis of that authority. And as a society moves away from divine authority and justification in its conduct, it will move closer to a satanic authority and a satanic justification of what it's doing. I think that probably goes without saying. Most of us know that. Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, God is in the beginning. God creates. But notice in verse 26 of Genesis chapter 1, and God said, underline it, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them, underline it, have dominion. God gives a level of authority to his creation, not to the animal kingdom. He doesn't say, let the fish of the sea have dominion. He says, let men have dominion over all of the things that God had created. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, the fowl of the air, over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. So when God begins, it is God, and God gives a portion of that authority. Now, does Adam have more authority than God? No, we're going to find out in a few minutes he doesn't. Why? Because God's going to give him some orders. But God shares that authority on a limited basis to mankind. I say on a limited basis, but notice the scope of that limitation. It basically covers everything on this planet. Somebody said, well, I don't think you should go out and shoot wild animals. Well, then teach them to get out of the way. You say, you have no right. I have every right. I have dominion. Okay? Well, you shouldn't go in. They fished the waters. Well, I'm not saying you should be a sloppy and a bad conservationist when it comes to it. But listen, I have a right to catch fish. You say, why? It's a divine right. Sometimes I wish I had a divine ability to catch fish. You know, the Lord said, cast on the other side. I would love to be able to do that at some point. I don't, but I have the right to do that because why? God gave it to me. You say, well, I don't like it. Doesn't matter what you like. It's between me and God. God has the ultimate authority, and God said, let this man that we've created have dominion. So God gives some of that authority to the man that he has created, and I might add, to the woman that he creates. Genesis chapter 2. Well, while we're still here, hold on for a minute. Let me go ahead and finish this. God created, verse 27 in Genesis. While I'm here, I'll finish it up. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female. There it is, created he them. And God blessed them. And God said unto them, be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, and what? Underline that word. What does it mean to subdue? Bring it under your dominion. Okay, he says that to man and woman. Bring it under your dominion. So God shares that authority that he has with his initial creation, Adam and Eve, and says it is your responsibility and your right to bring this world under your control. How many of you see that? That's what dominion is. Dominion is a regal term. We use it applied to kings and princes and potentates. Dominion, they've got authority. And so God here gives a portion. Does he give all of it? No. Because God at the same moment is going to tell them, don't do this and do this. So God still remains the high end of the authority, and man inherits a portion of that authority given to him. God blessed them, said unto them, be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. So where is man's dominion? Well, it's limited. It's only on this planet. But it is man's dominion. That's what God gave and instilled to us. And God said, behold, I've given you every herb bearing seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree. I can cut down my trees if I want to. In which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. If I cut it down, I need to eat it. That's what it was intended for. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to every creeping thing that creepeth, everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat, and it was so. Stamp of approval. Why? God makes a legal document. God said, I have all authority. I can do. Nobody has any greater authority than I. And so I'm giving you the authority to have dominion over the earth, signed, sealed, and delivered. Are you following me? Not really exciting yet, but let's move on. God bestows that authority then on that creation. Adam and Eve in the garden, the Bible says in Genesis chapter 2, verse 21, we find the formation or the presentation of Eve as she's brought to the Lord. The Lord caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam. He slept, took one of his ribs, closed up the flesh there instead thereof, and the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, he made a woman and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of the man. Do you understand that is an act of authority? Why doesn't God name Eve? God doesn't say this. Who says it? Adam. Now, I realize this. I'm already starting to rock the boat and I haven't even got past page one yet. Ladies, I'm not advocating that you are the slave and that man is the honcho that rules the world. But I am stating at this point, God says, Adam, it's yours, and I'm going to give it to you and your wife. But Adam then has an area of authority over Eve. You'll have a hard time denying that. I'm not saying he cracked the whip and she was his slave. But Adam had, you say, how do you know that? Because he's telling her that here. He, in essence, is he said, hey, I'm going to name you this. How well would that work today if your husband got to name you? Now you're getting my point. Adam says, this is the way it's going to be. They come through that area. Now come to Genesis chapter 3. We have both of them in authority. Man having authority that comes directly from God. And Eve having authority, but a limited authority in the sense that she has a husband. You say, I don't believe that. Well, then go to Ephesians and explain to me how Christ is a type of a husband if he has no authority. So the Lord is working here. Genesis chapter 3, therefore the Lord God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. This is after the fall. Notice, if you will, who violated the commandment of God? Eve, and both of them paid the penalty. Okay, you say, well, Adam took of it too. I agree with that. But Eve was the one that propagated the entire event. They both suffered because of it. So I would have conveyed to you that both of these, husband and wife, form a secondary level of authority. First of all, an individual, Adam. Secondly, a couple, Adam and Eve. They're given dominion. They're given authority. They have a shared authority together. Now, Adam still has authority higher than Eve. But Adam and Eve together have a shared authority over those things that are placed underneath them. You're looking at me like you're confused. How many of you work in a corporate world? How many of you understand there's a president, a vice president, a vice president, a VP under this, and somebody in charge of that, and a supervisor here, and all of those people have authority. Now, they don't all crack the whip and demand you to comply. But they all are higher in authority. Okay? When you see an NCO walking down the street, you see the stripes. And that'll tell you how quickly you better snap to. Or you see an officer, you'll see the brass or the gold or the silver on his epaulets there. And you'll know how quickly and how sharply you need to salute. You say, well, you know, they're all equal. Try that one time. Try that one time. As a matter of fact, try a guy with one star as opposed to a guy with three stars. Just two more stars, right? But if the guy with three stars says to the guy with one star, woof like a dog, he'll woof, woof, woof at the moon all night long. You say, why? Is he better? No, he has more authority. Now, they both have authority. Are you following me? Adam and Eve have authority. Both of them have dominion. But Adam has a level of authority that is above Eve. You say, well, okay, then go tell your boss tomorrow. You don't like the fact that he's the boss and you want him to get up and move and you're going to sit in his chair. See how that works out for you. You'll probably be looking for another job tomorrow night. Because it is what it is with authority. So the Lord sends him out of the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man and he placed at the Garden of Eden cherubims and a flaming sword which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life. So Adam violates God's command. Adam and Eve suffer the consequences. They're driven from the garden. And God, who is the ultimate authority, does what? He places an angel there to do what? Keep them from returning to the place they had once shared. They lost an element of the blessings that God had given them when he placed them in that area of his dominion. The garden's closed off. So as we move down, we have God, we have the individual, and now we're dealing with a couple. What happens to that couple? Well, guess what? They move out and they get married, or they get married and they have children, is what I was about to say. And we know what happens with Cain and Abel and Seth, all of those children that come. Now, who has authority over Cain and Abel and Seth? Adam and Eve and God. You say, what? We're coming down the chain of command, right? So if God says to Cain and Abel, don't do this, and Adam and Eve says, oh, it's all right. You say, oh, that can never... Well, go back to the garden and look at the fruit on the tree. God said, don't do that. They said, oh, it's all right. You better be careful. What does that mean? Does that mean, kids, that I have a right to disobey my parents? It means this, we ought to obey God rather than men. Now, don't put yourself in the place of God. Understand, kids, your parents are not better than you, not necessarily smarter than you, although I would hope they are. But God has placed you under their dominion for a time. Why? So you'll learn how to exercise authority in your own life. When you were born, you didn't ask anybody whether it was okay to cry. You didn't ask anybody whether it was socially acceptable for you to dirty your diaper. You just followed your urges. And somebody has to teach you that there is acceptable behavior and there is unacceptable behavior. And so God placed an authority in your life. And it's not your school teacher. It's your parents. That's why he said, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Now, who said that? The ultimate authority. What did the ultimate authority say? The one who created the man and created the woman and gave them some dominion. And the one that said that said to children, children, you obey your parents. Why? This is right. In other words, it's in the scope of my plan. So your parents exercise authority over their children. If they don't, what happens? Somebody else will take that authority. Somebody else will take that. I heard somebody the other day, they said, well, you know, the school and the government's taking away all the parents' authority. I'll tell you why, because we got a bunch of sorry parents who didn't fulfill what God gave them, not just as a divine right, but a divine obligation to raise our children. So parents, with that right of governance and dominion comes a responsibility to govern and to have right dominion. So we've got an individual, and then we've got a couple, and now we've got a family. And that authority extends on down through there. God now has authority over the family, right? Who's the super authority over the whole family? It's God. If God says yay and Adam says nay, who wins? God. If God says yay and Adam says yay and Eve says nay, who wins? God and Adam. If God says yay and Adam says yay and Eve says yay and the kids say uh-uh, who wins? Eve, Adam, and God, the higher authority. All that authority comes down from God. So listen, kids, got lots of kids. When you disobey your parents, don't bother asking God to bless what you're doing. That's why he said, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And God will always side with that which is right. So parents are in a position of dominion or authority over those who are in their care. their children. But we move on from the family as we go through the Old Testament. We move on through there. Let us notice as well, before we leave, there is another family that's mentioned that stands out in Scripture. Let me just give you the illustration. Genesis chapter 6, verse number 8. The Bible said, but Noah, we're right in the middle here of a genealogy. And if you don't think that's boring, go read it. So-and-so begat so-and-so and had sons and daughters. And after about four verses of that, you're going, I got it. Okay, lots of sons, lots of daughters. Let's move on to something. Let's go to a war somewhere, you know, something like. We're moving down through this genealogy. And all at once, as we're coming through these generations, we come to almost a signpost where God's saying, hey, slow down here. Something interesting coming. And he says this in verse number 8, but Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. What does that mean? Well, without even going into great detail, I understand that Noah has a relationship with God that none of the aforementioned had. Because you don't find said about them, they had grace in the eyes. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Meaning what? Meaning something's different about the relationship that Noah had with God than the relationship that the others had with God, because there's nothing said about it. He's drawn out of the context as an example. And God says, well, this guy had children, he begat children, he begat children, they begat children, sons and daughters. And but Noah, see what I'm saying? Found grace. God says, hey, look at this one. What's Noah an example of? He's an example of that family authority. Why? You want to be a great leader? Husbands, wives, those that are in authority over your children, follow the Lord. You say, I don't understand it. These are the generations of Noah. Verse number 9. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations. And Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now you can go on and finish the story, but I'm going to bounce over to Hebrews chapter 11. And in Hebrews chapter 11, here's what I read about Noah. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not as yet, not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world, number one, and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith, to the saving of his house. You know what Noah did? Noah submitted to his authority in an area of absolute obscurity. The Bible tells us it hasn't even rained on the face of the earth. And God looks down and says, Noah. And Noah said, yes. He said, I got something I want you to do. I want you to build the boat. You know, we've all heard the comedian, you know, about what's rain, you know, what's a boat. And ha ha, that's funny. But it probably was just about that bizarre to Noah. You want me to build a what? What's a boat for? So you can sail on the water. Well, I need to get down to the coast. No, no, we're not going to do it. You just build up here in the mountain. What? At every point, Noah is called upon to do something by his authority, correct? And sometimes what his authority demands of him is preposterous. And he submits to the authority. And as a result, who gets the blessing? The saving of his house. Do you understand, as parents, if we obey the Lord and follow his commands, our family will benefit. If we follow anybody else's commands, they may benefit. I'm not saying that God alone comes up with the great ideas. There's some people that know some things that can teach us some things about raising a family and resolving conflict. I'm not opposed to that. But when your chief authority becomes anything other than God in this book, you're in no man's land. The truth of the matter is, when a parent relies on God's authority and submits to God's authority, even when it seems, are you ready? Preposterous. Then his family will benefit. Now, I can tell you from practical experience, Noah has three children. I have three children. And I know what it's like to take three children on a long trip. Okay? It does not take very long at all until the excitement of leaving wears off. And the drudgery of traveling sets in. And the boredom of not being there overwhelms. And so there's no parent here who's taken a voyage or a journey with their children that doesn't understand the phrase, "Are we there yet? How long is it going to be?" How many of you have understood that the war breaks out in the back seat? Always. Doesn't matter. You can put the nice, docile one in the middle between the two opposing and say that's going to, and it won't. It'll be just World War III. That's the nature. Now, how many of you understand what happens in the ark after about day number 100? You say, well, that's silly. I'm trying to show you that Noah was willing to submit to God's authority. That doesn't mean he didn't have struggles and troubles. But at the end of the day, when that ark bumps and settles down on solid land, and a few days later when that door opens and the family steps out, Noah had done something that no other parent on the face of the earth had done. He'd saved his family. So, what does that mean? That means God has ultimate authority. And then underneath that, God gives that authority to an individual, to a couple then, a family. And each one of those provide blessings for everyone that is underneath that. You understand that? If we get the chain of command right, the result is always those underneath will receive the blessings. What happens when we get it wrong? I'm glad you asked. What happened to everybody else's family that refused to get on the ark? They all died. Well, whose fault was it? Well, I'm sure Noah didn't go to the kids and say, "Hey, kids, you need to get on the ark." I think he went to their parents, don't you? And I think he said to the parents, "This is what God told me, my authority. And this is what God said. And God said, this is what we're to do. And I've got a place for you. And will you?" And the parents were reluctant to obey God's command. And as a result, what happened to their children? They perished. Parents, understand this. Your following of God's commands will bring blessings upon your children. And your refusal to submit to God's commands will bring disaster in the lives of your children. You say, well, that's kind of simplistic. That's why I'm trying for you to get it. I want you to get it. It's so simple, most people don't even get it. God has ultimate authority. God placed that authority in a limited capacity in a man, and then he placed that capacity in a limited capacity in a woman and in a family. And now we're moving on down the line. We've got a family. And in that family, God begins to deal. And we began to deal with this family in the eyes of Noah, but we also began to deal with this family in Genesis chapter 12, where after the days of Noah, God says, okay, I've got an ongoing plan, and it still involves the family. And so he calls in Genesis chapter 12, verse number 1, who? Abram. And he says to Abram, "Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee." Let's stop for a minute. Easy to do? That's where he grew up. It was everybody he knew. All the family he had. You see, God's commands are not always easy when we receive them. But they are always beneficial when we obey them. So God says, hey, up, get out, pack, move on. Was it easy? No, not at all. "And I will make of thee," watch this, "a great nation." Here's the next level. We get into that idea where God's going to move on. Now, Abraham doesn't become a nation. Abraham becomes an extension of the family that leads us into that next. You say, what is it? It's kind of an extended family. We're going to find out of Abraham comes the nation of Israel ultimately. But before that, they're referred to as the 12 tribes of Israel, which is a bunch of families grouped together. We would call that a community. a bunch of people, perhaps related, perhaps non-related, perhaps of similar circumstance. But now then we're moving along from that family to an extended type family where now we've got aunts and uncles and, Lord forbid, mothers-in-laws and mothers and fathers-in-laws and all of that kind of stuff. But God begins to move there. You say, what are we dealing with? God's going to give to them some authority as a group. God's going to give to them some perks if they follow His commands as a group. Just like He gave to Adam and Eve in the garden. Just like He gave to Noah and his family. Just like He gave to Abraham and his family. Now then, those family units are going to assemble themselves together in what properly would be called a community. Meaning what? Meaning they don't all live under the same roof. Thank the Lord. And they don't all get along. Okay, everybody knows in every family, there's some weird people. Okay, I'm just helping you. If you don't know who they are, ask me to go to your next family reunion. I'll point them out for you in 5 or 6 minutes. Won't take me long at all. I'm an expert when it comes to pointing out weirdos in families. Every family has some. And so God's going to assemble now a larger group, a larger congregation as it was. And guess what's going to happen when He assembles them? He's going to give them some authority. Adam and Eve get some authority. Noah gets some authority over his family or with his family. And now then these families are going to begin to link themselves together, and there's going to go some authority with those family units. Verse number 28 of Genesis chapter 49. Genesis chapter 49, all these, verse 28, are the 12 tribes of Israel. We could call this a tribe. We could call it the beginning of a community. And this is that their father spake unto them and blessed them, everyone according to the blessing he blessed them. And he charged them and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite. Now, God did not come directly from Abraham. Where do the 12 tribes come from? Jacob. We got Abraham and Isaac, and then Jacob. And then out of Jacob come these 12 tribes. So God is taking his time to gather this larger group together, and ultimately it comes, and when it does come, he gives to them some authority. Notice the 12 tribes were all gathered together. He charged them, saying, I am to be gathered unto my people, bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron, bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite for a possession of a burying place. And they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife. And there I buried Leah. The purchase of the field and of the cave that therein was from the children of Heth. And when Jacob made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed and yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people. You know what he says? He says, the land is yours. The land that God gave to Abraham, Abraham passed to Isaac, Isaac passed to Jacob, and now I'm giving it to you, my 12 sons, which are become 12 tribes. A perk. A perk. And so as we move along, God now has bestowed some authority. You say, how does that authority show up? Well, it shows up real extensively in the next book as God moves into the land of Egypt. And in order to set free those 12 tribes, which, by the way, for the first time are referred to as a nation. So now we move from tribes to a nation. And God says, set them free. And Pharaoh says, I'm not going to set them free. And God says, I'll destroy your country for the sake of those 12 tribes or that one nation that those 12 tribes have become. And he destroys the nation. He destroys the nation. Heard someone the other night talking about some of the Egyptian ruins. They've always been a big thing for people to examine. And he said, there are so many chasms in Egyptian history. He said it is almost as though they stopped and then 1,000 years started again. And I thought, well, I know what a couple of those stops are all about. God put the woe on them and said, you're not going anywhere till you comply with what I want done. You say, what kind of authority do they have? Well, listen to Moses. Let my people go. If you don't, this is going to happen. And this is going to happen. And this is, hey, Moses had authority over the king of Egypt. Where did he get that authority? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And God said, and he gave some authority. And he passed some authority. And he gave some authority. And that authority always comes from God. And so when he says, let my people go, you know what he said? If you don't, I'm going to get you. No. How many of you know the king of Egypt was not afraid of Moses? He hated him. Who was he afraid of? He was afraid of the God that Moses got his authority from. You understand, if we follow biblical authority, that the buck doesn't stop with us. Okay? The buck stops with heaven. And I'd rather they'd have to take it up with God than with me. So what happens? Now we've got a nation, but not only a nation, because for the first time we see a nation emerge, but there were obviously other nations. Egypt was a nation. And as Israel formed itself as a nation, they were very much, I'm sure, like Egypt. A lot of people, a lot of houses, industry, you know, vocations, workers, everybody working together. I'm sure that in a lot of situations, they would have seemed very similar to those in Egypt. But for one thing, what made them distinct from the nation of Egypt? It was their worship of God. In other words, their reverence for the author of all authority. And so as they come out of the land of Egypt, you know what they do? They begin to sacrifice. They build the tabernacle in the wilderness. All of those endless instructions in Exodus and Numbers and Deuteronomy that are so boring, I should say, and tedious to us because we have no grasp of them. Those were the things that the children of Israel used as a line of demarcation between them and any other nation on the face of the earth. They were the people of God, who is the author of all authority. And so as they come out, God shows himself on there as they leave. We know the story. We know the story as they begin to leave and Pharaoh says, hey, let's get out there and get him. We can't, too big of an asset for the nation of Egypt. We can't let them get away. I've made a tragic mistake. Get the army together. Let's go out there. We'll have them back here by sunset. And God said, oh, no, you won't. Because I told them to leave. I'm bringing them out. And if you try to stop them, I have the ultimate authority. And so when the Egyptian army comes out against them, God just kind of destroys them. You understand, when we line up with our line of authority from God, God always takes care of the issue. I submit to you that the church today has gotten out of the line of God's authority. And when that happens, we become like every other nation or every other family that disobeys God. As long as we stay in line with that authority, we are in good shape. So the children of Israel journey out into the wilderness. And we know the story. This is the first instance. Here we go now. We go from an individual to a couple or a marriage. We move on to a family. We move to an extended family or a tribe, or by the way, it's kind of how the church is run, like a family. A lot of the means and ways a church is to be governed is like that of a family in many ways. And then we've moved on now to a nation with its own national religion, the worship of the one true God who has bestowed that authority as it comes down. Now, what does that mean? That means God's going to do some special things. Now, while this is a nation, it's not really a nation yet. Why? Because if nations are going to survive, the onslaught and the opposition of other nations, they need to be strong. And Israel's not strong. Israel's a babe in that sense as a nation. And so God brings them out into the land of comfort, the land flowing with milk and honey. And oh no, he doesn't. He brings them out into the wilderness. They haven't gone very far before they come to the Red Sea. And what happens at the Red Sea? They can't get across. And so God teaches them the first thing that any nation needs to know. You got to look to me. And so Israel's leadership looks to heaven and says, what am I supposed to do now? And God said, I'm glad you asked, because I'm the guy that gave the authority to Adam and Eve and to Noah, and you've got that authority. And so I'm, now that you've asked, I'm going to tell you what to do. Hold up that stick in your hand. Again, doesn't make good sense, does it? What are you going to do? Beat the water? But you see, no, what you're going to do, you're going to recognize the only authority I have that is any real authority comes from God. And as long as I will comply with his authority, everything works out just fine. What does that mean? Well, I'm going to close here. But young people, here's what it means. If you'll find God's will and follow it, no matter how strange and bizarre it seems, it'll all work out fine. And 20 years down the road, you'll look back and laugh. And you'll laugh because you'll say, I almost really messed my life up there. I almost went to the left and God said, no, go to the right. And it looked absolutely impossible, but God's blessed it and God's honored it. Why? Because it's recognizing that he ultimately is the authority and his word is the pronouncement of his authority. And my need is to be in compliance with his word, his authority, and to do what he says. So Moses picks up a stick. How many of you remember last time he picked up the stick and God said, throw it down? You know, Moses and this stick are not on good terms. He has every reason in the world to think, oh no, here we come. But you understand, it's not about a stick. It's about the authority of God. It's not somehow that he had a magical stick. I'm sure you probably can find a museum somewhere in the world where you'll find Moses' stick. Probably three or four museums. They all have them. It's an amazing. I've said before, I've been in the Hofburg Palace and Museum in Austria, and they have five or six of the nails that held Christ to the cross. You'll have to think about that one for a while, but you'll get it eventually. Somebody's probably got the stick. It wasn't about the stick. It was about the God of authority who said, use the stick in this way. And every time he used the stick the way God said, there came an eternal truth and a great blessing out of it. Young people, God's going to give you more and more authority as you grow older. Parents, God's given you authority. Use that authority to follow your authority, God. And sometimes when it seems ludicrous and absurd, do what he says with the stick. And God will make it come to pass the way it's supposed to. At the end of the day, Moses stood on the other side of the sea and he looked back across the sea. There was no path visible. It was gone. And the dead bodies of the Egyptians floated up on the shore. And he turned and he walked away with the stick. We have an authority. There is divine authority. In the beginning, God. And God said. And if we'll abide that line of authority, God will take care of matters always. It may seem absurd. It may seem frightening. I have a sermon on the little fellow that was the one who was the oldest. I believe that the older son in the household appreciated the Passover more than anybody. You say, why? Because he's the one that would have had to die. And I think that nobody enjoyed the trip out of Egypt and nobody enjoyed the trip across the Red Sea more than that older son did, because he was supposed to be dead. I think he ran down through there and he was swooshing his hand along the side of the water there. I think he was splashing water on all the girls and other boys and all that kind of stuff. I think he was just enjoying the trip. Why? Because he realized God had acted on his behalf. And somebody had obeyed God's authority, and that's the reason he was still alive. You're saved today because somebody, somewhere, obeyed God. Listen, it wasn't some magical, wonderful individual that you say, oh, they were just wonderful. They told me about the Lord. Well, let me help you with that. They're not any more wonderful than anybody else. You say, but they came to me. Yeah, but they probably didn't want to. You say, but they just loved me to Jesus. Now, they probably loved cheeseburgers and said, the quicker I get this over, the quicker I can get to a cheeseburger. I'm just being honest. But when we submit to the authority that is over us, wonderful things happen. And sometimes we get credit, but we're not the ones that save anybody. It flows from God above, down through that line. So we've got that authority vested by God in an individual, then in a couple, then to a family, then to an extended family or a tribe or a church, then to a nation. And that's where we get to what we'll study next time when we get together. Because that's where it goes downhill. We'll find that as this nation comes together, over in the book of Samuel, God brings David to the throne. 2 Samuel chapter number 2. David comes to the city of David and they make him a king, first of all, over the southern tribes. And then in 2 Samuel chapter 5, he becomes the king over the united tribes of Israel, all 12 tribes. And they enjoy a time of prosperity and blessings of God that are just almost immeasurable. You say, well, David wasn't such a great guy. No, he wasn't. And there's another lesson to be learned there. When God gives you an authority and you fall flat on your face, get up and do what God told you to do. You say, well, David failed morally. David becomes an example of moral impropriety. He becomes an example of what not to do in your life. Somebody said, well, why did God pick him up? Because God gave him some authority and put him in a place and said, serve me here. And I believe if Moses hadn't thrown down the stick, God probably would have still delivered him. If Moses hadn't held up the stick, God probably still would have delivered Israel. But Moses would have lost out. You see, we bring that blessing to ourselves when we obey God. God may go around you and get it to somebody else if we don't. David becomes the king. And in that time frame, Israel enjoys a time like no other before or since. It is the high day of Israel. And then we're going to go on and look because things begin to fall apart just about as soon as they're established. And with that comes a fellow by the name of Solomon. And I think Solomon represents the authority that we deal with in our day and in our time. You say, what is it? It's a human instrument of divine good that's become concerned and conceited with itself. And I think that's where we're living. With a nation that has been blessed of God like no other, with the exception of Israel. And now we've come to a place where we've gotten just too big for our britches. And we've forgotten our blessings come from God, who is our authority, when we submit to his authority. And when we don't submit to his authority, he still has the authority and he can go around us and he can go over us. And we're the ones that lose out. We become the Noahs who don't see our families saved. We become the outcasts like Korah, Dathan, and Abiram who withstood Moses and the ground opened and swallowed them up and their households. But God got through. You understand, God has a purpose, God has a plan, God has a line of authority. And if we are in step with that line of authority, we'll always see the blessings of God. If we step out of that line of authority, God will go around us. and we may suffer the consequences. And I think America has stepped out of the will of God. And they say what Israel said under Solomon, we want to be like the nations that are around us. And God's hand comes off, and we'll read next week what comes about as we follow through this line of authority. Now, you didn't fill out anything on your list tonight because I didn't get that far. Put it in your Bible and be here next time, and we'll help you fill it out. All right, let's stand tonight and be dismissed. Thank you for your attentiveness, and I hope that you found something of interest in this. Young people, God put somebody in authority over you. And you better learn to respect that authority. Couples, God put somebody in authority. You're not capable of leading your family. God's got some authority there. You better submit to that authority. And you, all of us have got, we're in that line of authority. Some people have more authority than others. That doesn't mean they're better. Just means God has placed that plan and said, you go here, you do this, you stop this, you do this and start this. And if we'll comply with what God said, that authority will flow down to us. And wherever we're in the will of God and submitted to his authority, there's always the blessing of God. I believe that no matter what happens in our country, there's the possibility of being prosperous and blessed in the will of God. But if we're not careful, we see authority gone bad and we say, well, that's it. I don't have to submit to any authority. And then we're in a dangerous position.